Good evening, good evening. It is the 9th. 9th, yes, tis the 9th, right? Yeah, 9th of June 2023. I hope you're having a great summer. And I hope you will check out the Jolly Heretic on YouTube. He has a video about how bald, left-handed people who may be slightly autistic and are very intelligent and who don't particularly care if they ruffle feathers, that's kind of the major ingredients you need for works of genius. So, I am left-handed. Think I'm fairly smart. It's kind of funny. I've made lots of errors. I think my most fundamental error, which I think I've largely corrected now, but only by crushing... crushing any optimism and hope in many ways for the short term, like an anaconda crushing an egg to suck out the innards. What I've done is I have completely erased from my personality, as much as humanly possible, any tendency to think that the world is anything like me, or you, for that matter. Me, I see reason and evidence, and I would consider it a shameful, horrifying thing to reject reason and evidence. It would be really, really embarrassing. To me, rejecting reason and evidence is an act of slavish submission to those in power. So, you know, when you're a kid and you're told all kinds of nonsense and all kinds of crap is inflicted upon you, you can't say no, right? Because you're a kid, right? So, you know, the school teacher says all this crap. You're like, okay, a little longer. Your parents say all this crap. If they did, you know, a lot along the priests and so on, right? And rejecting reason and evidence, to me, is the mark of an abject slave. Now, I had to do that shit when I was a kid. I had to, you know, you got to survive as a kid, and you got to navigate the weird, flaming, lower intestine trenches of whatever cultural mazes you're dropped into. But as an adult, to reject reason and evidence would be to return to the life of an abject and bullied slave. I would just consider it so unbelievably humiliating and embarrassing. You know, like when I was a baby, I kind of had to crap my pants. As an adult, I really don't have to. I may choose to, but I don't have to. And I would rather crap my pants in public than reject reason and evidence, because that's the mark of being free. It's to accept reason and evidence. So for me, I would consider it unbelievably humiliating, embarrassing, and contemptible in myself to reject reason and evidence. But other people... they're just missing something, man. You notice this? They'll just mouth the most absurd platitudes and reject reason and evidence and just mouth the silicon train tracks of whatever path has been instilled in them by the blatant propagandists of the age. And they just repeat all of this nonsense with a nod and a smile and a this and a that and the other. Like, I had a guy in my life when I was younger. Didn't choose to have him there. I had a guy, and he and I went up. I'm the rational empiricist, and he was the subjective mystic, right? And I remember at one point, and this was sort of towards the end of our relationship, he said, and we were still quite young at this point, at least the end of that phase, and he said to me, he said, you know what I wish for? You know what I wish? You know what I would absolutely love? Is if you just... held up something, you let it go, and it just floated there against all of your science and reason and empiricism. Eek. I mean, that was pretty brutal, right, to do. I wish for the world to become insane so that you, Steph, will be wrong, and I, person X, will be right. It's just awful. So, yeah, I was like, hey, the moment I can, like in my mid-teens, right, when I achieved independence, I stopped living with my mother at about the age of 15 or so. And when I achieved independence, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm into philosophy. I'm done with this nod and smile, repeat nonsense crap. I'm no longer a slave. And of course, you know, I still had to do it a little bit. I still had to finish out high school and so on. And that's one of the reasons I talk about my time working up north, gold panning, prospecting, because... you had to accept reason and evidence. If you didn't accept reason and evidence, you died. If you weren't an empiricist, you died. I mean, the conditions up there were so extreme, like minus 35, minus 40 degrees, treacherous ice everywhere going through the wilderness. I worked with massive drills and flamethrowers, and like you simply could not be subjectivist or mystical in any way, shape, or form. You just couldn't do it. It's one of the reasons why I don't really believe any intellectual theories of people who've never had to work with their hands. Like I just, you know, you can manipulate words. You can't manipulate reality in that same way. So, all right. So let's get to your questions. Would folks like a video of Stefan at full philosophical scream? Yes, it really is. When Jared turns on that computer, you can see it from satellite photos. The lights dim in his neighborhood. Let's see here. I don't know. I don't know. It's like a dollar tip. It's like, I don't understand. I don't understand this thinking. I don't understand this thinking. If you only have a dollar, please keep it. Please, I don't want to take your last dollar. I fundamentally do not understand this thinking. Like if I was at dinner and I was enjoying a good meal and chatting with the waiter and I liked the waiter and so on, the idea that like, let's say I had a $50 meal with a friend of mine and I, or I don't know, whatever it is now these days, and then I left a dollar tip, again, isn't that just a pride thing? I don't understand. Like I just don't understand. All right. But that's the variety. Let's see here. Yeah, UFO news. Yeah, I don't believe even the slightest shred of it. All right. So the question of UFOs. Let me just make sure. Is this of interest to you? I mean, I guess you've come here tonight, and thank you very much for the tips. You've come here tonight. Hit me with a why if you would like to know everything there is to know about UFOs. I want to make sure I am okay. We've got some whys, some n's. All right. So about 70-30 whys to n's. Okay. Well, I'll do it, but I'll keep it short. You may have time to make a coffee. All right. So UFOs. So you know you can't crack C, right? You can't get past the 186,000 miles per second that is the speed of light. And so the closest star is Alpha Centauri, 4.3 light years away, which means even if you travel at the speed of light, which distorts all kinds of time, according to the song 39 by noted astrophysicist and guitarist Brian May of Queen, it's going to mess up time. And so the idea that we have interstellar travel is virtually impossible. I mean, that's sort of number one. Now, we know for sure that there's no intelligent life outside of this community, outside of Earth, right? In this solar system, right? Mercury's too hot, Venus is too acidic, we're okay. In the Goldilocks zone, Mars is too cold, the asteroid belt is too fragmented, Jupiter is too giant and murky, Saturn is too beringed and too giant and murky, and once you get out past Uranus, then things get all kinds of cold and dark. And so Pluto veering in and out of being a planet and all that. So there's nothing in our solar system other than us. So it's got to be other stars. Now, I don't think they have found planets in other solar systems that are in the Goldilocks zone. In fact, the M-class planets, I think they're called. In fact, they found planets around solar systems where they're better suited to carbon-based life forms. Maybe there's silicon out there as a whole, but carbon-based life forms, they have found planets out there even better suited to life than Earth. So I have absolutely no doubt, right? You've got 100 billion stars, you know, a couple of hundred billion planets. You've got 100 billion galaxies. Like, the numbers are truly mind-blowing. Like, just everything that's out there in the universe, without a doubt at all, any way, shape, or form, there is life out there, and there is intelligent life out there, and so on. Now, intelligent life, there is no warp drive. There's no faster-than-light travel. There are no wormholes. Like, all of this weird, soupy, mystical crap physics is all just a bunch of circle-jerking guys consuming government money, promising shit that they will never, ever deliver. I remember dating an engineer, more than, like, 35 years ago or more, and reading, oh, superstring theory, man, it's going to change the world, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, it's all a bunch of lies and nonsense, never produces. It's like stem cells research. Oh, it's about to change the world. It's like, no, not really. It's just a great way to grind up babies for fun and profit. And it's the same thing with all of this physics crap. It is largely garbage. It is largely nonsense. And it certainly doesn't produce anything of particular value as a whole. And I know there'll be a whole bunch of people who know you hate science. And I absolutely love science. Science leads to engineering, leads to usable products. But this circle jerk of, well, we're going to spend $1.5 trillion trying to get Einstein's unified field theory finally sorted out. It's like, I don't care. I don't care. Give me something I can use. Well, you know, theoretically, time travel is possible in this, that, or the other. It's like, don't care. Don't care. I don't want time travel. I don't want time travel. Let's say I went back to yesterday. You know where I'd be? Would I be any younger? No, I'd be dead. Why would I be dead? Because time travel is not geospatial travel. So, like, the Earth is moving, right? So let's say that the Earth is moving. You and I are moving with it, right? And let's say I go back a day. Well, the Earth ain't there. I'm just in space dead. It's like everyone has this thing, like, not only do I travel through time, but I also go back through the corkscrew movement of the planet, and I'll just be right where I was. Delicate Sound of Thunder, Ray Bradbury style. It's all absolute nonsense. So, yeah, there is absolutely intelligent life out there. Now, let's say... But because nobody can go faster than the speed of light, let's say they're Betelgeuse. What is that? 300 light years away or something like that. Probably isn't Betelgeuse, which is, I think, a giant red star and so on. But let's say, you know, it's a couple of hundred light years away. And maybe there are some brave explorers who cryogenically freeze themselves or decide to abandon their... And like, you know, I guess the people went to the New World not knowing if they were going to get back in the sort of 15th, 16th century. So... maybe they're intrepid explorers who just want to freeze themselves and fly and explore and so on. And let's say they're 200 light years away. Okay, so by the time they get here and explore and go back, close to half a millennia is gone, right? I mean, would you go on a trip? Would you go on a trip if it meant you really couldn't come back for 500 years and everybody you know would be dead and gone and you wouldn't even know if your civilization had survived? And it just, again... these are all the limits. You can't go faster than the speed of light. Subjectively, you will feel that it's less time, but objectively, it will still be greater time. This has all been proven with atomic clocks in orbit. They lose time a little bit. So, okay, but let's say that somehow this can be cracked. Now, everybody knows what happened with our space program, and by ours, I guess collectively everyone's referring to the major superpowers that went into the space program, in particular America in the 1960s, right? So America in the 1960s, John F. Kennedy was like, we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade, and they did with a couple of months to spare. And what's happened since then? A couple of trips back to the moon, and then it all just died. And then the space shuttle went up and down. They couldn't find any economically efficient way to do it. Now, I know they put a bunch of satellites in orbit. There's Starlink, and there's a space station, the ISS, where sex is forbidden, I believe. And so what's happened? Well, what's happened is government corruption, government slowdown, government bureaucracy, government wastage. So the initial enthusiasm all dies off, right? The initial, I've talked about this before, how at the beginning of the NASA, at the beginning of the space program, you get all these engineers from the private sector, they're incredibly motivated, and you're combining massive amounts of government money with incredibly motivated people who came out of the free market and therefore are competent, skilled, and you had a raw meritocracy. And then whatever happened, you know what happens in a meritocracy. It's always the same goddamn thing, literally is goddamned thing. The same thing always happens in a meritocracy. What happens is the square root of the people in the endeavor produce half the value. And so you've got 1,000 people working on it, and you know, it's just nuts. Just a very tiny proportion of 10,000 people working on something, 100 people of them produce half the value, and 10 of those produce half the value of that. So of 10,000 people, 10 of them are producing quarter of the value. They get all the accolades, they get all the money, and then everyone else gets resentful and annoyed and uses the state to claw them down and destroy the raw meritocracy, which is the only way you get any kind of excellence is raw meritocracy. There's absolutely no other way to do it. So the resentment, the ressentiment, as Nietzsche talked about it, the resentful people look up and see all of these incredible achievers and they just want to claw them down or, I don't know, deplatform them if we take a really abstract example, not involving me in any way, shape, or form. The people who really shine are the ones who get targeted, right? Anybody, like the tall poppy syndrome, the hammer that sticks up is the one that gets hammered down. The tall poppy is the one that gets cut. And so, and it's really, it's a form of sexual a sexual display. So if a man, let's say a man, is truly excelling, then he sets the standard. Hypergamy kicks in. Women either want him or they're willing to settle for another guy, but guys don't want to be settled for. So what they have to do is they have to lop off the top of the masculine hierarchy so that hypergamy points more towards them, towards up. It's using the state as a fundamental sabotage of people better than you so that you don't have to improve, or maybe you can't, you know, you can't really improve. So, I mean, you know, the mainstream media with me, this, you know, lots of sort of examples of this. So how on earth are people going to develop? How on earth is a civilization going to develop interstellar travel, right? Well, the only way that a civilization is going to develop interstellar travel is if it has no government. Because if it has a government, all the people with excellence will end up being sucked into the government or destroyed by the government or rendered relatively poor by the government. And the government then will be used as a giant club to destroy the raw meritocracy so that less able people pretend that they're able to compete. And it just will never, it will never happen. It will never happen. So the only way that you get space travel, interstellar space travel in particular, maybe even interplanetary, is if there's no government by which the resentful and less competent can destroy the meritocracy necessary for such engineering, scientific, and technical excellence. So, and the reason why there would then be international, the reason why there would then be interstellar travel would be what? It would be to, like in the same way that the British Navy scoured the seas to try and eliminate the international plague of slavery, thus ensuring that the British and others would be blamed for slavery for the... until the end of time. It's almost inevitable that way. No good deed goes unpunished. It's a fundamental truth of the universe. I thought was deeply cynical, turns out to be quite accurate, and really more accurate than physics in some ways, because at least there's quantum physics, which reverses some of the traditional physics stuff, but there's no escape from good deeds going unpunished. So they would come to our solar system in order to talk to us about a truly free society, or maybe liberate us from governments. I don't know, whatever, right? So... and the idea that they would have that level of technology but crash in a field without being able, like, come on. I mean, if they have interstellar travel, you don't think they have cloaking devices? I mean, come on, people. I mean, if they're that brilliant, then they'd be able to hide being seen, right? Maybe the women are flying. No, so, again, if it would be women, it would be raw meritocracy, right? So... if they are that brilliant, then either they don't want to be seen, in which case, why would we see them? Or they do want to be seen, in which case, why wouldn't they just land where all the cameras are, right? So it's all madness, nonsense, delusions, and a massive distraction. The idea that the U.S. military or any military in the world is holding on to a bunch of space aliens in Area 51 or not, I mean, come on. It's all absolute nonsense. Why would they... be here? Like, they would be here for one of two reasons, right? Either they want to observe, which, I mean, for space aliens who freed themselves and have a truly free society, coming back to watch this horror show would be like, I don't know, strapping yourself to watch Aztec child ripping open rituals from now until the end of time. Nobody but a masochist would do that, and they have to have peaceful parenting in deep space and on other planets. They have to have peaceful parenting in order to have a stateless society, and peacefully parented people don't have the stomach or the desire to watch what we're doing here on Earth to our children. It would just be masochism. And again, if you're raised peacefully parented, you wouldn't be a masochist. So they would either be here to observe, right, in the sort of prime directive, non-interference kind of way, or they would be here to help. Now, if they were here to observe, then... they can't have any contact with us. And, of course, they would have the technology for completely invisible drones to come and get the information, beam it back, whatever, whatever, right? And stay far out of our orbit on the dark side of the moon, whatever was necessary. So we'd never know that they were here if they were just here to observe, which they're not. So the only other reason they would be here is to help us pass through this passage of statism to what, of course, I advocate for, a stateless society down the road, in which case they wouldn't achieve that by crashing into some remote area in New Mexico and being found by a bunch of soldiers. I mean, come on. So, yeah, it's all complete nonsense, and it's a salvation fantasy. They would be bringing a free market ethos. They would be bringing peaceful parenting to us, and they would be saving us from the sociopaths and predators that run the world as a whole, and they're not doing any of that. And so I absolutely know. Like, the idea that they've come here to take us over and so on. Come on. If they have a takeover kind of society, then they're still enmeshed in collectivism, anti-rationalism, hierarchical oligarchies, statism, and so on, in which case they can't get here. You can only get here. The only way we progress is peaceful parenting, property rights, stateless society. That's the only way we progress to interstellar travel. And so the idea that they're here to eat us or take us over or whatever. And there was a great little line in a Douglas Adams book about how space aliens came to Earth wanting to take us over, but ended up being eaten by a dog because they had tragically miscalculated their various relative sizes to us. So that's kind of funny. So, yeah, it's and of course, you know, the idea that there are these aliens that beam you up, anally probe you, and then put you back down. That's just, of course, rewritten, unconscious replays of sexual abuse as a child. And again, I think it was it Carl Sagan who was first thinking of that kind of stuff? So, yeah, I would not do it. I mean, hey, guys, if you're out there, we do need some help. Those of us who are wanting the non-aggression principle, you really need to help us. You really need to help us. So why are they pushing UFOs again? Because it's a distraction, right? It's a distraction from the, like the Trump thing today, right? It's just a big distraction from what's going on in politics. And it's just a shiny object, a squirrel that takes people away from what they need to talk about. All right. Let's get going on this. Get your questions, comments, and issues. Have you ever bought the probability argument of ET existence? Yeah, actually, believe it or not. So when I was a teenager and I got my first electric typewriter, and then I got an Atari 800 with 8K of RAM, baby. 8K of RAM, which I then upgraded to 40 by meeting a guy who sold me 32K of RAM for $70, literally pulled out of his coat in a parking lot in the middle of nowhere. I'm not sure. It was totally on the up and up, looking it backwards. But I remember also going across to the Don Mills Mall and a guy jumping out of a windowless van saying, "Hey, man, we got some speakers for sale. You want some speakers? Got to hurry, though." I'm like, "Wee, wee, wee." So, yeah. What about bending space with ridiculous amounts of energy? I don't believe any of that stuff. I really don't. Like, I'm down with theory of relativity. That's all been proven, general and special. I'm down with all that stuff, but no. Yeah, I don't believe that, right? All right. Spaceman came traveling on a ship from afar. But what if the alien creates wormholes? Yeah. So here's the other thing, too. If you look, just look at the Earth, right? And look at, say, the European powers coming up against the Aztecs and the Incans, right? And people, you know, it's funny because people always say, well, the conquistadors, they conquered the peaceful local population in Central and South America. It's like, no, they didn't. So one of the reasons why the conquistadors, the Spaniards, won against the Incans in particular was because the Incans kept stealing everyone's children to sacrifice them to their bizarre blood-soaked rituals, which their gods were literally fueled and fed by the agonized tears of children. So they would torture them for days, and people were tired of having their kids kidnapped and mutilated and tortured for days and then finally slaughtered by the Aztecs. And so they teamed up with the conquistadors to take them down. So, yeah, it was their liberation, at least to some degree. All right. UFOs are a psyop. Chinese are working on a moon mission. Excellent. China is dying, right? I mean, demographically, they can't. No civilization, with one exception, no civilization has ever been able to reverse demographic decline. Once you tip below that 2.1, right? 2.1 children per family, 2.1 children per two people as a replacement, at least. They can't reverse it. I think under Franco, which is certainly no, this is no endorsement, of course, of Franco, but the fact is that under fascism, you can briefly stop that, but it then just continues right afterwards. So. All right, let's get here. And if their vehicle malfunctioned that badly, we probably couldn't get it fired up again. Yeah, for sure. Somebody says, I've always found it revealing that people commit so much energy to this topic versus tangible issues in the world, including those they could influence if they wish to. No, but you see, it's tribal signaling, right? It's like the flat earth people. It's tribal signaling. It's making sure that rational people stay away from you and other crooks and crazies get close to you, right? It's just like this subsonic communication device and all of that. So let's see here. CNN tomorrow, why aliens are racist. Yes, probably. Speciest. Or can you imagine the aliens land tomorrow in America? Take us to your leader. Oh, man. I'm telling you, it's really not a good time right now. It's not the time. Come back. I remember Joe Rogan's argument was that aliens would be interested in us in the same way that we are interested in zoo animals. Yeah, that's an analogy. It's not an argument. Aliens would not view us as zoo animals because we are abstract reasoning creatures capable of morality. So they would not view us as zoo animals. What does Occam's razor suggest about the uniqueness of Earth? We don't need Occam's razor. We know for a fact that there are many planets that are in the Goldilocks zone, not too hot, not too cold, and so on, right? Steph, politics is getting dangerous. Has it ever been corrupt like this when you were a kid? I mean, yeah, it's always been corrupt. It's just more so now, right? It's more obvious now. So when people had the illusion of free speech, so just so you sort of understand how this works, and I can say this with some very vivid personal experience. So you were allowed to have free speech as long as there were gatekeepers, right? So you were allowed to write whatever you want as long as there were people in place to make sure it was never published. Or if it was published, it was never distributed. Or if it was distributed, it'd be hidden. Or if it was hidden, like, so you were allowed to have free speech as long as there were gatekeepers between you and the general population, right? Now, as soon as self-publishing and like sort of mimeograph and Xerox even to some degree, and particularly as soon as the internet came along, the rise of the internet was the rise of hate speech, right? Because when they didn't have gatekeepers to keep arguments from the general public that they didn't want the general public to hear, when they didn't have those gatekeepers, they then needed to take away the pretense of free speech, right? They needed to take away the pretense of free speech. So it's sort of like you say to your kid when they're 12, oh, yeah, you can drive anywhere you want. But then when they get 16 and they get their license, it's like you have to take away the car keys because now they can actually drive somewhere, so you can't let them, right? So. All right. Hey, Steph, what if we're talking about information-based life forms like AI? AI is not a life form. AI is a word guesser. AI is a word guesser. It is not life at all. Would they need the non-aggression principle if they had hive mind-like state of existence and could minimize conflict below the threshold necessary for interstellar travel? Yeah, AI is not not alive. It's not even close. It's not even a simulacrum of life. Let's see here. I know a person who is all in for conspiracy theories and flat earth. It's a distraction of the real cause of the world's problems, our own sin. Painful to realize? Right. All right. Could be a rant here. But I really, really, really want to make sure that you are into the rant. Do you want a rant? Hit me with a why. If you want to rant. Yes. Yes. All right. We'll do a rant. And then if I have any voice left, we'll do a song quiz. All right. Somebody says, thank you for the comment. I know a person who's all in for conspiracy theories and flat earth is a distraction of the real cause of the world's problems, our own sin. Painful to realize. The real cause of the world's problems is violence against children. Do you know why the WAW phenomenon, women are wonderful, WAW, do you know why that phenomenon exists? Do you know why women are consistently deferred to and considered to be glorious angels of lovely virtue? Do you know why? Do you know why? Why? Because women are the gatekeepers and the sheep herders through the portal of hell. Women commit violence against children at about twice the rate of men. And women murder children at about twice the rate of men. So women are the tyrants of childhood, which produces men as the tyrants of adulthood. You can't maintain brutality without violence in early life. And the violence in early life is almost exclusively driven by women. Now, you can say, but Steph, it's only twice. Yes. Okay. Who chooses the men that are in the child's life? Who chooses the men that are in the child's life? Women. Absolutely. You know, I've got a whole bunch of call-in shows. I talked to a fellow yesterday. You may remember him from a couple of live streams ago. He said that free domain and philosophy prevented him from becoming a serial killer. Do you remember? You remember that guy? Do you remember he left these comments here? Well, I had a 3-hour conversation with him. Now, his mother brought men into his life who beat him, screamed at him, tortured him, put out cigarettes on his arm, and also straddled him on the bed with scissors, threatening to slice his genitals off. And that's not even the worst. Now, are these men responsible for what they did? Absolutely. Is that evil? About as much as can be imagined. But who is fundamentally responsible for these men being in this young man's life? The mom. We can't save the world until we understand female evil and recognize female evil, but men are programmed to avoid the reality of female evil. Do you know why? Do you know why men are programmed to avoid the reality of female evil? Eggs? Yeah, somewhat. 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 Reproduction? Somewhat. Would require confronting your own mother's mistreatment of you? Yes. Because they were raised by them? Yes. But this answer is going to hurt. I'm telling you, man. Assume the position. As the Scottish foreplay cry, battle cry goes, brace yourself! Hang on to the headboard you're going through. I'm telling you, this is going to leave a mark. Stand still, laddie! Everybody have their philosophical truth crash helmets on. I'm going to let you have it. Don't drive at the moment. Don't drive. It's just going to hurt, man. This is going to be one of the ones that hurts the most, I'm telling you. I don't mean to hype it up. I'm telling you, man. When I say this, you won't be the same afterwards. Are you sure? Come on, give me a why again. Are you sure you want this in your head? Give it to you. Oh, man, you guys are brave. One person says no. Okay, well, you can mute me, right? Hurts so good, yeah. Right. Okay, okay. So, here we go. Satellite radio, you all get hit with the boom, boom. The reason why men avoid the reality of female evil is they don't believe there's an alternative. Are you ready? Do you get that? Do you get the depth of that, the detonation of that? The reason why men avoid the reality of female evil is they don't believe there's an alternative to mate with. No, I didn't say all women are evil. I didn't say that. Didn't believe. Don't believe. They don't believe that there's an alternative. Why hold out for something you don't believe exists? Do you hear what I'm saying? This is the perception. I'm not saying it's the reality. This is the perception. Would you hold out for a 10-foot-tall woman? Somebody says, I used to believe there wasn't alternatives. Then I put on the free domain goggles and found a good woman. I sat on a couch, says someone, listening to my wife raising her voice too much to our children. I was just thinking, oh my God, this is hell. Relatively good, but still hell. Do women believe there is an alternative to chats? Yes, there are also suckers destined for a divorce court. All right, let me ask you this. Hit me with this number, and honestly, I'm happy to revise the hypothesis. Hit me with this number. Give me this number, please. When you were growing up, how many women did you know who were truly virtuous? How many females could be, I wouldn't really count siblings. How many females, and by truly virtuous, I mean not only did they were virtuous themselves, but willing to confront others who were immoral. So we've got everyone saying zero, except for one person who said one. That's fine. Minus one. That's a true statement. Okay, now listen, let's be fair, right? Let's be fair, because this might not just be a female issue. We're talking about male to female, right? Okay. I remember some nice athletic mothers. I don't know what the hell that means. Okay, here's the division. Don't hit any more with that last question. Oh, you got two. Okay, fantastic. Okay, let's just wait for this to finish. Okay, let me put the break in here. All right. So don't type any more about this. Let me just try one more time. Okay, don't type any more about this. How many men do you know who were virtuous when you were growing up? Who tried to be honest, tried to be honorable, were willing to confront evildoers to some degree. Right. So somebody says 4 to 5. Somebody says 1. Somebody says 1. And a lot of zeros. Many of the kids I knew. Yeah, that could be the case. I mean, kids are limited in their capacity to achieve and maintain virtue, but okay. So why do people settle for immoral partners? Why do people settle for immoral partners? Because they don't believe it's settling. They believe that that's all there is. They don't believe that they're settling. They believe that that's all there is. You and I don't settle for women under 10 feet tall. It's not settling. We don't settle and say, well, I could get an immortal elven woman, but I got this weird fetish for aging and death, so I'm going to get a mortal human female. Now, I am in the position of course, I'm being married to a wonderfully virtuous woman. You want a 10-foot-tall woman? What, to change your diaper? Because that's kind of the ratio you're looking at, brother. So this is kind of the frustration that people have. And you understand that by promoting the possibility of virtue in men and women, I'm completely recalibrating. Completely recalibrating people's standards. And the people who are trashy don't like it when quality comes along. But this is what I talked about, the meritocracy. Society only advances with a ruthless meritocracy, but the meritocracy promotes rage, envy and violence in those who can't compete. This woman says, I didn't know any good people existed till I met my husband. I'm thrilled to hear that. I think that's wonderful. It's wonderful. So we can't confront female evil because most of us, okay, you were very suspicious. That makes sense. Okay, let me ask you this. If you have experienced physical violence, what percentage of that violence came at the hands of mothers, of females, as opposed to fathers? And we're just talking about on the receiving end, from adults, not from siblings or whatever, right? So what percentage of violence that you have received, if you have received physical violence in your life, spanking, hitting, and so on, what percentage of violence has come from the females as opposed to the males? All right. What do we got here? 99%, 80-20, female to male, 100%, 0%, I was never hit. That's great. 90-10, 90 female, 20% female, I guess 80% male, 60 to 70% female, 100% dad, none from mom, right? My mother would do it, or she would order my dad to do it. Yeah, I mean, the causality and moral responsibility gets a little bit foggy if the woman is like basically threatening the dad. She threatens the dad saying, you know, you got to hit him or basically you'll be in the doghouse, you'll sleep on the couch, you're not supporting me, and I'll nag and bitch you into, you know, a semi-suicidal state, right? 100% dad physical, yeah. 80 to 90% female. My father was mostly absent, right? Females used verbal attacks. Okay, well, I'll put in, of course, I've never been hit by a male adult. Never been hit by a male adult. Only by females. Okay. So, sorry, I'll wait for people to finish their typing here. Mom got dad to stop spanking. Good for her. That's great. Honestly, that's wonderful to hear. I mean, it'd be better if she'd married a guy who didn't spank in the first place, but I guess that's something, right? Mother used to berate me for hours. Dad left when I was six. He was too drunk to spank. Wait. Mother too drunk? I don't know who's too drunk to spank there. Right. Did you have violent men in your life during boarding school? I must be misremembering. No, you know what? That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Yes, I did get hit. I appreciate that. Thank you for the correction. I did get hit by a headmaster in boarding school. Thank you. I appreciate that. And if I remember rightly, I don't know what the truth is about these things, but it was my father who wanted me to go to that boarding school. Somebody says, Freddie Mercury was abused in school. Oh, yeah, well, of course. You don't end up with that level of sexual compulsion. It's funny, people say, well, he didn't come out. It's like, of course he did. He has got a solo album called Your Kind of Lover or something like that. You got to talk it out man to man, make each other understand. It's like, yeah, that's got to talk it out man to man with my lover. Ugh. All right. Okay, appreciate that. Now, let's go to verbal. Let me just put a line in here. My line in the sand. Let's go to verbal. When it came to verbal abuse, what percentage did you get from females and what percentage did you get from males when you were a child? Not counting siblings. Just adults. What percentage female? What percentage male? Verbal abuse. Say 100% female, 100 to 0. 50-50, tough one, 90% female, 10% male. Let's see here. Father seldom, but it seemed disciplinary. My mother hit often, and it only seemed like losing her temper. 80% female. If passive-aggressive language, verbal abuse. I don't know. I need a bit more details on that. This person says, Joe says, 90% male, 10% female, about 50-50. My mom did yell until my younger siblings were in their teens. I learned to obey so I wouldn't get spanked. Mom yelled more than dad. Female, 90%, male, 10%, 95% female, male, 30%, female, 70%, including female teachers, it's like 80 to 20, 90% female. Again, my father was absent. Female, 70%, male, 30%, 70, 30, more male. Okay, so that's you, okay? 90% female, 80, 20 more female, right? This is, I think, very much in line with the data that I've seen, which is that women use physical and verbal abuse at much higher levels than men. At much higher levels than men. And this is not discussed about. Or, of course, if it's mentioned, with men, even if their upset is justified, it must be characterized as immoral. With women, even if their immorality is unjustified, excuses must always be made, right? So if it's this is why it got so boring on social media, right? So on Twitter, I would post something like, women hit children at much higher rates than men do. And I would provide the source data and all of that, right? Now, what would everyone immediately do? What would they immediately say in return? Well, they would, yeah, misogynist, but what about men? Exceptions. My mom didn't. Yeah, men's fault. Women spend more time around kids, so of course they're much more likely to hit them. And I'd be like, oh, okay, so if somebody said that men beat up their wives a lot more, and then, men spend more time around their wives and whatever it is, like, it just, my moms are stressed, it's men's fault, you know, if we had proper childcare, if women, it's because the men left and women have so much to deal with and they're overwhelmed, and like, yeah, absolutely, excuse. It's the real misogyny is creating excuse for women's immorality. The real misogyny is excusing women's immorality. So someone says, are women using force because they aren't physically imposing? Yes, so in America, female cops discharge their weapons at suspects at a higher rate than males because men are bigger and can be more intimidating and so on. It is something that, like, once you see it, your entire planet changes. When you say women want equality, right? And of course, I write about this in my novel, The Present, which I hope you have listened to or read, and if not, please do it. It's free, and it's fantastic. They're real, and they're spectacular. So once you see this, you can't unsee it. That the moment you hold women morally accountable, excuses come flowing out. And why do excuses come flowing out? Because people don't believe that there are trustworthy women out there. And so basically what I'm doing is they're afraid their genes kick up, right? So when I say marry a moral woman, they say, ain't no such thing. And their genes are like, well, shit, you gotta attack this guy and side with the women because we don't believe they're immoral women. And so if you listen to this guy, he's going to create an impossible standard that ends your genetic line. He might as well be castrating you. Like, I'm running at you with a pair of scissors, right? And this happened over and over and over, and it got really boring. Really boring. And people just didn't, like, they didn't seem to at all understand that when I was saying, let's hold women morally accountable, and then by saying, no, the women aren't immoral, it's not their fault, it's men's fault, it's the system, it's society, it's stresses, right? When they make excuses for female evil, that they're saying women can't be moral. You could not be more misogynistic than that. You could not possibly. And of course, when people are acting in ways that their ideology condemns, do you know what the first thing they do? Like, when people are acting in ways that their ideology condemns, the first thing they do is project, right? The first thing they do is project. So if you say we need to have higher standards for mothers so that they don't hit their children and abuse their children and, in extreme cases, obviously kill their children, you know, a man who kills a child is evil. A woman who kills a child is just suffering from a mental illness that society didn't support her on. It was really tragic. Saying that women can't morally improve, that women can't be moral. I mean, saying something like that is monstrous. Absolutely monstrous. It is the deepest and blackest-hearted misogyny that is even remotely possible. Like, you could not condemn people more than saying all of their evil doesn't exist or isn't their fault and somebody else's fault. You're preventing them from improving, right? Now, you understand that saying that women, like, hold out for a virtuous woman is also telling women to hold out for a virtuous man, and therefore a lot of men who don't want to improve and still want to be chosen by women will keep women down, will keep women amoral, will keep them way down, right? So it just got, oh man, it just got really boring. And the lack of self-knowledge, the lack of insight, the lack of understanding was just brutal and crippling and just eye-rolling. Just eye-rolling. I don't know. I would consider it the mark of Cain, the mark of abject enslavement to reject reason and evidence. And when you point out that a lot of the evils in the world are driven by female manipulation and violence, and you have the data to support it, and everyone takes away moral responsibility from women, it's like, okay, so the world can't be fixed, right? The world can't be fixed. Because people would rather breed than be moral. And this is the eternal tension. We were breeding a long time before we were moral as a species. And so I'm not saying that it's just a big factor, right? The animal or the angel, right? The reproduction or the moral. And everyone who says women are not responsible for immorality is doing so because they don't believe that there's a virtuous woman. Or if there is a virtuous woman, they couldn't possibly get her. So they're holding women down so that they can continue to operate at this trashy level, so that their genes can do their trashy reproductive thing. So, I mean, it's a fundamental question that if you're in the dating world, you need to ask. Is there such a thing as a moral opposite sex, right? For women, is there such a thing as a moral man? For men, is there such a thing as a moral woman? And of course there is. Of course there is. Of course there is. So why is everyone so hell-bent and obsessed with believing otherwise? Because empirically, right, most people have experienced more direct evil from women than from men. Most people have experienced more direct evil from women than from men. Statistically, that's true, even in this obviously unscientific anecdotal question here in this live stream. Most people have experienced more, and in many cases, twice the amount of violence from women than from men. And so there's the personal trauma as well. But the world can't fundamentally improve in any sustainable way until we hold people morally accountable. You can't do it. Somebody says, I think about this a lot. I look at less virtuous people than myself and have a negative thought or feeling about their choices. Then a part of me says, well, at least they have reproduced. What good are your values if they die with you? Right, of course. I mean, that is the biological part of us, the animal part of us, which is an essential part of us, and I don't have this mind-body dichotomy thing. It's an essential part of us that says it is better to reproduce with an immoral woman than to die a monk of pure, right? But that's a false dichotomy. That's a false dichotomy. I mean, you know that, right? That's a false dichotomy. And the false dichotomy is I either reproduce with an amoral or immoral woman, or I don't reproduce at all. Right. And the fact that we give women moral blank checks is why they vote for the welfare state, because they're used to getting things for nothing. They're used to not having to earn some things. Because people are always making excuses for women and externalizing their moral responsibility and allowing them and encouraging them to blame others and to be the perpetual victims and so on. And so because we, and this is, you know who else we treat like that? Do you know who else we take away moral responsibility? Mentally damaged people, insane people, and little children. You know that line from The Godfather, Mario Puzo?
Men cannot afford to make mistakes. Women and children can make mistakes. Men, we cannot afford this.
So putting women in the category of people who are mentally defective, insane, or little children is about as misogynistic as you could possibly get. And yet, the barrier to holding women at least as morally accountable as we hold men seems to be virtually insurmountable. And that arises from the sin of despair, right? The sin of despair. Well, if I have moral standards, I'm going to die alone. And that's the temptation, right? I mean, this is in the Bible, right? It is better to live on a square corner of a roof than in a house with a contentious woman. I mean, whoever we make excuses for and refuse to criticize, they rule the world. And of course, you understand that the powers that be in this world desperately need women to harm children. Can you imagine? I mean, if the dictates of hierarchical power were to be confronted by an entire generation of children who hadn't been bullied and beaten and yelled at and broken. There's a reason why. You have to outsource the breaking of children, and generally it's to the mothers. And this has been, you know, it's sort of very boring. And again, it just got so boring. Because, I mean, honestly, being on social media became like rewinding a movie, watching it again, and hoping for a different ending. It's all just, it's so boringly predictable. And you realize, I mean, and I had to sort of withhold my growing contempt for the mindlessness of humanity as a whole, right? Joining late. Hey, Steph. Hey, man, thanks for the tip. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, you really have to preserve your optimism. You really have to preserve your optimism, which means don't expose yourself to people pretending to think. You know, like a third of the population has no inner dialogue. 40% of the population can't entertain theoreticals. Well, if you didn't eat breakfast yesterday, how would you feel by noon? Kind of hungry. We understand that. But I did eat breakfast yesterday. But I did eat breakfast yesterday. No, if you didn't. No, but I did, right? I just can't even do remote theoreticals. And that used to be something that was the province of the less intelligent. Now everyone's just been programmed with, you can't believe the hypotheticals thing? Oh, yeah, no, that's a real thing. That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Let's see here. Let's see here. Yeah, no, it's a significant number of people. They don't have an inner voice. They don't argue with themselves. They don't have inner voices. And they just can't process hypotheticals. So, you know, is the important thing that children are subjected to violence often at the hands of women and that shapes and defines society as a whole? Is that the important issue, or is it whether the world's flat or not? Whether the world is flat or a sphere there's still evil people on it doing evil things. And I think focusing on the evil people doing evil things, a little bit more important than the shape of the planet. Or whether there are UFOs. Or whatever, right? All right. Somebody has a quote here. This is Proverbs 21:9. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Yeah. YouTube won't ban the flat earthers. Well, of course, right? What harm do they do? And here's the thing, too. Like, society, you understand, society needs a contingent of really kind of crazy people with crazy beliefs, right? So that they can lump other people in with those people, right? So you can say flat earthers and, you know, and then the belief that, right? And that way you can cross-pollinate and taint, right? All right. No, that's not a dog whistle. All right, so let me just get to the questions that I may have missed from the main area, and if you find this stuff useful. Well, and look, the question of like, okay, well, do I reproduce or do I hold my standard of virtue? So all you have to do is ask people who've made that compromise if it was worth it, and they got married to an amoral or immoral woman, and they tried raising children with said person and asked them whether it was a good idea, whether it was worth it. Well, here's a conspiracy theory is a funny phrase, right? And you know that conspiracy theory was invented as a shortcut to give people an excuse to not think. All of these phrases, right? These phrases in society, they're like the mind killers. They're like mind flayers from D&D. They're like shivs up the nose. Mind killers. Conspiracy theory. Oh, you mean that people might collude in the pursuit of evil? I mean, the funny thing is, it's literally like saying, conspiracy theory is like saying theft theory or murder theory or rape theory or home invasion theory or fraud theory. Why? Because all of these are crimes. Conspiracy literally is a crime in all Western law systems. A conspiracy is a group of two or more people gathering together for the commission of a crime or evil doing. Conspiracy is literally a crime, and so conspiracy theory is theory of crime. Theory of crime. I mean, we know that conspiracies exist because we see them all the time, and of course they're actually in the law, right? In the law. So it's wild that people think they can. But conspiracy theory is just a term that's invented to shut down debate, like hate speech and exphobia, phobia. Oh, you're just phobic. It's like, that's not an argument. Not an argument. Just lion phobic. Not an argument. Yeah, it was invented by intelligence agencies to discredit opposition, right? You know, like if you question anything, you're anti-science, right? You're anti-science. Well, of course, we were inoculated against the blind following of science, which, of course, it is anti-science. It's anti-scientific to accept the argument from authority. As great Richard Feynman said, I read his book, his autobiographies as a teenager, the great Richard Feynman wrote, all science is founded on skepticism of the experts, skepticism against the experts. Yeah, trust the science. Science is exactly not trust. See, trust is like the word faith. Have faith in the science. You know, science is exactly in opposition to faith. Because faith says believe against reason, and science says you must never believe against reason, and reason and evidence is required for acceptance. That whole vaccine, I mean, it's just a It's just a giant test of whether you could think or not. Yeah, conspiracy theory. The theory that people who have money and power conspire to have more money and power. Right. 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 So, yeah, when people say conspiracy theory, they're saying you are making arguments that make me uncomfortable, and the whole purpose of language as inflicted by centralized authoritarian institutions, the whole purpose of language is to give you an eject mechanism from an uncomfortable conversation that makes you feel morally superior. Let me say that again. It's so important to understand. The whole purpose of language that comes out of hierarchical institutions is to give you an eject mechanism from a difficult conversation that makes you feel like a good person. Right, so if people are talking about uncomfortable facts, oh, that's racist, I'm out. You know, I refuse to engage and blah, 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 right? I won't lower myself and dignify this with her, right? It's, you know, because normally if people run away from a fight, it's considered pretty cowardly, especially if you start the fight, right? You know, like if Bob comes up and starts pushing a guy half his size and it turns out the other guy is like some ninja expert and then Bob just screams and runs away, then Bob is like, well, that's, Bob would lose his reputation. I would lose his reputation. He'd be like, oh, yeah, remember, oh, Bob the tough guy, yeah, he picked on that guy who was smaller than him, and the moment it turned out the guy could fight, Bob screamed and ran away like a stuck pig. So the purpose of institutional language is to have you run away from a fight and everyone perceive you to be better rather than worse and more cowardly and more incompetent and just terrible. And it's a way for you to maintain your pride in cowardice. 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 So you can feel morally superior for running away from a fight you started. As opposed to, ooh, ooh. Question for StephBot. I don't know if you mean me or the AI. Does not having kids versus raising them in a home where they will likely be abused violate UPB? What? Not having kids is a violation of UPB? How on earth do you follow that? Are you saying it's universally preferable behavior to have kids? You understand what universally means. It means that you must be forever having children. Universal. Universally preferable behavior. So you're saying having kids is universally preferable behavior? I don't understand. Can a guy in a coma have children? No, then doesn't even pass the coma test, which is the first test for these kinds of things, right? Yeah, just imagine everyone doing it all the time. If it's not possible, then it's not UPB. Can everyone do it all the time, even in a coma, even while asleep? Can everyone, everywhere, do it all the time? And so if you think about not raping, is it physically possible for everyone to not rape? Right? Which is why positive moral obligations always violate UPB. In other words, thou shalt, thou must, rather than thou shalt not, or thou must not, right? A man in a coma, like if you have a moral obligation that requires a positive action, it can't be UPB. Everyone everywhere can follow tax laws, though. No, that's not the issue. The issue is, if tax laws are UPB, then everyone must be able to create and enforce tax laws at the same time. And that's impossible, right? So if you and I both have the ability to create and enforce tax laws, just look at it logically, right? So you say, no, I created a tax law that you owe me $10,000. No, I created a tax law that you owe me $50,000. Like, it can't be done, right? Plus, a guy in a coma can't create and enforce tax laws. It's a positive obligation. Boom, 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 right? It's the right to create, right? You owe $1 billion. Yes, right. Being celibate versus having kids in a home where they will likely be abused. That was the question. But what? I'm sorry, I don't understand. Are you saying which is more moral? Okay. if you have kids in a home where they are being abused, that is, the abuse is a violation of the non-aggression principle. It's assault, right? And therefore, it's not UPB compliant. Being celibate is not a moral category because it involves neither the enforcement nor the denial of the non-aggression principle. So being celibate is a matter of self-ownership, and you are not compelled to have children, you are not compelled to reproduce, you're not compelled to have sex, because if you're compelled to have sex, that's rape. So being celibate is a matter of self-ownership. And if you choose to be celibate, I think it's better to have kids. Maybe I'd put it in a category of aesthetically preferable actions, which is things that are better but not enforceable. Like, you know, being on time, right? It's better to be on time, but you can't shoot people for being late, right? So being celibate is not a violation of the non-aggression principle, but children being assaulted is a violation of the non-aggression principle. So you're going from a morally neutral place of celibacy to a morally evil place of children being assaulted. So again, maybe I'm missing something, but that would be mon answer. Moi answer. I don't even know what answer is in French. I know a lot of French words, but for some reason, not that one. Question. All right. Let me just get, I know I had some questions here that I wanted to get to, or maybe get three. Of course, I am happy to take your questions as well. Isn't annoying people wrong because the person being annoyed cannot prefer it? The person being annoyed cannot prefer it? But annoyance is an internal state, which is yours to manage. And if you're annoyed by someone, it's yours, your emotion to manage. Right? So if you were to say it's UPB for everyone in the world to manage everybody else's emotions, that's impossible. Because I can't have my emotions be managed and simultaneously manage someone else's emotions at the same time. So manage other people's emotions cannot be UPB. Plus, it doesn't pass the coma test. A guy in a coma can't manage other people's emotions. So a person being annoyed, first of all, it's their emotion to manage. Either they can change their mind about the stimuli, or what they can do is they can remove themselves from the annoying stimuli, right? I mean, if you're in a park and somebody's playing annoying music, you can ask them to turn it down. Maybe the park has a policy, but if the park's fine with it, you can just move if you find it too annoying. So anyway, can you explain the coma test short, please? So the coma test is a first test for a proposition. And if universally preferable behavior cannot be achieved by someone in a coma, it's not UPB. So if you say it is universally preferable behavior to give to the poor, it's moral to give to the poor. Morality is UPB. It's UPB to give to the poor. Therefore, to give to the poor is moral. Can a guy in a coma give to the poor? No. Now, if you say X is moral, then not X must be immoral, right? So if I say not rape is moral, then rape is immoral. If I say not assault, not assaulting people is moral, then assaulting people is immoral. So if you say giving to the poor is moral, then not giving to the poor must be immoral. But a guy in a coma can't give to the poor, therefore you're saying that a guy in a coma is immoral. Same for force. Isn't consent internal? No, I don't know. I don't know what that means. Sorry. I mean, a guy in a coma is not assaulting anyone. He's not raping anyone. He's not murdering anyone. He's not stealing from anyone. A joke. Is the silent treatment UPB? Oh, that's interesting. So again, I mean, it's a fun question, right? The silent treatment where you just don't talk to someone because you're upset with them. I guess that would pass the coma test. I mean, you're certainly getting the silent treatment from the coma test, but the silent treatment is intentional passive aggression designed to manipulate somebody else's behavior by giving them the negative stimuli of, we hope, temporary ostracism, right? And so if you're saying that everybody must give everybody else the silent treatment, well, that's impossible. Because the silent treatment has to be something that people know is being inflicted on them. And if I give the silent treatment to some guy in India, he doesn't even know I exist. So it doesn't work. So the silent treatment can't be achieved as universally preferable behavior. But it's a good, I mean, I get that's funny, and it is funny. So the coma guy is working hard tonight. Yes. Yes, he is. All right. Let me get to these questions. All right. What is your opinion about making children share? My daughter is almost three and thinks everything belongs to her and wants to snatch other kids' toys and also doesn't want other kids playing with her things. I don't want my kid being obnoxious, but I'm also kind of over-hovering over her on play dates to make sure she's playing correctly. I hear you, and I went through a bit of a thing that way as well. What's wrong with your child? I mean, morally, what's wrong with her child not wanting to share her toys? I mean, you want her to have boundaries, right? You want her to have her preferences. You want her not, obviously, when she gets older, you don't want her to share her body. You don't want her to share germs. You don't want her to share screaming. I'm not saying she would, right? So in general, children go through a very possessive phase at around that age. Very possessive. They just want things to be theirs. They want to have their space. They want to have their stuff. And they're just not big on sharing. And it takes a while for children to even recognize that there is value in sharing. Because they only play one-on-one with their toys. And so if someone takes, like, if I say to my daughter, let's play ping pong, then she's not like, well, I don't want to share the table. It's like, well, the only way we can play is to share the table, right? When she was young and I'd say we had a game called Go Go Giraffe or something like that. And I say, let's play Go Go Giraffe. We'll have to share the spinny wheel. Okay, well, spare the. Or let's play Monopoly. We'll have to share the board and the money. The money we'll have to be able to give and take to the money. We'll have to sort of share the bills. And she'd be like, yeah, okay. But when kids are three, they don't really get, there's not that back and forth. It's not like they're, if I say to my daughter, let's play cards, of course, we'll have to share the deck to some degree, right? She'd be like, well, yeah, of course, right? But a three-year-old doesn't play in that way with other children. I mean, there may be a little bit of peekaboo or whatever, right? Maybe a little bit of hide-and-go-seek, but that's not property-based. So at the age of three, your child is like, the only way to play with toys is for me to play with them, and if another child takes my toys, I can't play with them, and that's a negative. Now, when they get older, they will understand that sharing can be cross-pollinating beneficial, right? Either you share a toy with another kid and they share their toy back, or you share the game that you're playing and so on, right? So there's nothing wrong with her. If she thinks everything belongs, wants to snatch other kids' toys, doesn't want other kids playing with her things, yeah. My daughter was not a snatch other kids' toys. She definitely didn't. She went through a very strong phase of not wanting other kids to play with her things, which I found a little embarrassing, to be honest with you. And I, you know, it's like, no, that's bad. I wanted to share. And it's like, but snatching other kids' toys? That's interesting. She wants to snatch other kids' toys. So why? Why does she see that? Why does she want that? There's something going on there. Have you ever confiscated her toys? Have you ever taken away her toys for some reason? Have you ever put her in a timeout? In other words, snatched her up, so to speak. Have you ever violated her property rights? Have you ever taken toys from her to share with other people? Like, there's something that's being modeled here where she wants to snatch other kids' toys. And the first place I would look is how you're modeling it. Also, have you put her in environments where other kids snatch her toys? How has that become normalized? Because again, I want to say my daughter is like the sine qua non, the sort of essence of all of this stuff, but certainly for my daughter, she definitely wanted to hold on to her own stuff like Grim Death, but she never snatched other kids' toys because we've never taken anything from her or anything like that. So boom 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 boom. Let's see. A person being annoyed can manage their emotions, but also can a person being coerced can choose to give consent? What? A person being coerced can choose to give consent? What are you talking about? The whole point of coercion is to bypass consent. It's like saying the woman being raped can choose to consent. No, she can't. The whole point of rape is you don't consent. Say, ah, well, she could consent to not die. It's like, no, but she's still, the whole definition of rape is not consent, right? The whole definition of theft is not consent. Right, if I leave something by the road with a sign saying, take me, like an old couch or something, I can't call the cops and say someone stole my stuff because I've given consent to them to take my property, right? If I go into a boxing ring and to fight someone, I can't say, oh, it's assault, right? No, you've given consent by getting into the boxing ring, right? Same thing with hockey with an accidental injury in someone, right? You know, like my finger's much better now, but about a little over a week ago, you can still see a little swollen there, right? Like, waxed the hell out of my hand in volleyball. And it was a kid who spiked it at me or whatever. It was I had to have some pretty sharp words with the guy. But because it was a low net and I was playing with a bunch of teens, and this one guy just smashed it straight at me. And it's like, I was like, dude, come on. This is a low net. Don't be ridiculous. Don't spike that hard. Plus, there are kids playing, right? So I had to be pretty sharp with the guy. But, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to charge him with assault? No, I'm like, okay, there's some risk involved in these sports, and I get that. It was kind of a stupid thing for him to do, but whatever, right? I can't help his relationship with his dad. So, the consent and coercion are complete moral opposites. So, all right, give consent. Force and consent are opposites. So if somebody sticks a gun in your ribs and says, "Give me your wallet," you're not consenting to give them your wallet, right? I always spike in pickleball. Well, that's fine. Pickleball is a wiffle ball. A volleyball is like a cannon, man. All right. Let's see here. I heard street fights are legal in Texas as long as both consent. I have no idea about that. I don't know about that. Steph, have you considered the role that culture plays in the confrontation of female evil? Seems like most of the stuff like spanking and yelling at children were cultural norms. Yeah? So? Cultural. See, people put the word cultural in like it explains anything. Cultural doesn't explain anything. It's just saying a whole bunch of people believe it. So? The question is, why do a whole bunch of people believe it? Oh, well, they were trained that way. It's like, well, people are trained into a whole bunch of things that they don't believe. What steps would you suggest to live a virtuous life? Define your values, rational, universal, empirical values. Promote those values and reject those who reject morality. I mean, give them the chance, obviously, give them conversations and so on. Guys who spike on a low net are the same guys who hang on the rim after dunking on a 9-foot leap. Nope, totally different, because guys who spike on a low net are injuring others. The guys who hang on to the net, a basketball net, are not doing that. Dodgeball can go from consensual play to unconscionable or non-consensual abuse very quickly when a bully plays. Yes, that's true. Hey, Steph, question about poker. I was very good and made a lot of money, but stopped. It felt nasty and manipulative since it is a zero-sum game, and to make good money, the best strategy is to take a lot of money from bad players. Was wondering your thoughts. Oh, it's not immoral. You're not initiating force or fraud. Right, I mean, if you do this thing where you pretend to be bad and then you end up, when the stakes get higher, you end up winning, that's immoral, but you won't do that, I'm sure. So, no, it's not necessarily the most honorable way to get a hold of money. Again, it's not a net add to the economy and so on, and you maybe are taking advantage of people's hubris and so on. Like, if I sort of went to some 19-year-old kid who was kind of cocky and said, let's have a debate and, you know, you'll pay me $1,000 if the crowd thinks that you pay me $1,000 if the crowd thinks I won and vice versa, I guess I would be, in a sense, be punishing his hubris if he said yes, not that I would ever do such a thing. But so it's not immoral what you were doing, but I could certainly see why ethical questions might arise as to, aren't I just taking money away from people who are a vein and so on, right? All right. Somebody says, I don't take her toys unless a neighborhood friend is over and picks up one of her toys to play with, and she'll get upset and try to take it back. I'll take the toy and say, we need to share. What? Why? She has had timeouts a handful of times when she throws tantrums for about 5 minutes. Yeah, I'm sorry. I disagree with all of that. There's no sentence, including the word. There's no part of your sentence, including the word "a" and "the," that I don't disagree with. Okay, So a neighborhood friend is over and picks up one of her toys to play with, and she'll get upset and try to take it back. I'll take the toy and say, we need to share. Why does she need to share? Why does she need to share? If you have a neighborhood friend over and your child is three, it's too young to share toys. It's like having a three-month-old baby and expecting them to be toilet trained. It's not appropriate to the developmental stage. So you physically take the toy from her and say, we need to share. She doesn't understand the concept of sharing. She doesn't understand the value of sharing. Those are your values being imposed upon her. And you're showing her you don't trust her, and you're also showing her you think she's a bad person in a way. She's had timeouts a handful of times when she throws tantrums. Well, why is she throwing tantrums? My daughter has never thrown a tantrum in her entire life. Never. Not once. Not once. And she's played with a whole bunch of kids. She's got a great circle of friends. She's had some challenging times and all of that. Why would she have a tantrum? Kids throw tantrums because you're not listening to them. You're imposing things on them. And also, when you say, we need to share, that's a lie. I know I don't want to be overly semantic, but we need to share. Why? First of all, there's no we, because she knows it's not your toy, it's her toy. So when you're saying we, there's this kind of faux collectivism there that's kind of annoying. And you're giving her a moral commandment without her understanding it. Now, the last thing you want to do is give your kids moral commandments without them understanding it. And if they can understand it, then they're morally responsible. That's fine. Then you have conversations about it. If they can't understand it, how dare you impose a standard on a child that the child cannot understand? That's just being a bully, frankly. That's just being a bully. You have to do this. Well, she doesn't understand why. She doesn't understand the value. She doesn't understand the morals. She doesn't understand the... She's just not there yet. I mean, you might as well say you need a bra. She's three. She's not there yet. Sorry, I hate to be negative, and I appreciate the question, and I'm sure you're going to be a great father. I'm sure there's absolutely wonderful things that you do, so I'm not trying to be negative or hostile. I'm just, this stuff just annoys me, and I'll just be upfront with you. It doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just telling you it is annoying. Why does she need to share? Aren't you going to trust that if you show her caring and love and empathy, and you share your food with her, and you share things with her, don't you understand that she's going to get the value of sharing through that? Why would you want to impose something she's clearly not ready for yet? Are you saying that you just don't trust her to become a good person? Why? Why wouldn't you trust her to become a good person unless you take away her toys or jam her on a step for 5 minutes? Which isn't even correct. If she's three, a timeout should be 3 minutes, not five. She throws tantrums. Why is she throwing a tantrum? Because she's not being listened to. Because rules are being imposed on her that she doesn't understand. And if she can't understand them, then you're kind of mean to impose the rules on her. And if she can understand them, then reason with her. Don't just impose things on her. Don't just say, hey, you know what? I'm bigger and stronger. I'm going to take your stuff and make you follow these rules. And if you don't, I'm going to pick you up and put you over here and keep you over here until you calm down. I'm telling you, no, you're not saying it like that, but that's probably how she's hearing it. Oh, great. What have you proved to her? That you're bigger and stronger and willing to use force. And it is force. Imagine you're at work in your chair and you get up to disagree with your boss and he holds you down or half picks you up, puts you back in the chair and shoves you down. I don't get it. I don't get it. How dare you use force on a child? She's not there by choice. She's trying to understand the world. She's starting from scratch. She's got a blank slate. She's trying to understand how things work. She desperately wants to please you. How dare you use force on a child that you chose to bring into your life? You want to model the behavior you want to see from her. Would you give her a timeout for being unable to pronounce the word totalitarianism at the age of three? You need to say totalitarianism. You need to say this word. Of course she's going to get upset. Of course she's going to throw a tantrum because she's panicking. Why is she panicking? Because she's been asked to do something that she can't do, that she's not ready for, that she's not evolved for yet. I mean, look, just, oh, for God's sake, think about evolution, right? Think about evolution. You know that we evolved in a situation where resources are scarce and half the children died before the age of five, right? So she is in the red, flaming, bloody mode, alligator teeth danger zone of her childhood, evolutionarily speaking, right? Now, just out of curiosity, what do you think happened to little children at the age of three if they shared their food with whoever was hungry? What happened to them? Anybody, take a guess. What happened to those children? What have we evolved for? What happened to those children? Right? Oh, you want some of my food? Here's my food. Oh, you want some of my food too? Here's my food. You want some food? Here's my food. They died. Often. Sometimes. Doesn't matter. If it's a 5% greater chance of dying, it's going to get selected out. Now, when you get older, sure, you see kids with their candy at Halloween. They trade to make sure they get the better candy, and you like the Milky Ways, and you like the Wonder Bars, and you like the Kit Kats, and you like the Twix, and everybody trades to get what they want. It's win-win. Why? Because they're 8 years old. So they understand trading and sharing. And they're past the danger zone of five. So, of course, when she has something as a three-year-old, she's going to want to hold on to it, and she's not going to want to share it, because that's how we evolved, to survive. And you're asking and demanding that she go against her basic and essential survival instincts. Oh my gosh, she had a tantrum. Isn't that weird? Well, if somebody was trying to force you to jump off a cliff, you'd freak out a little bit too. And I'm telling you, like, the hoarding of things when you're that age is a survival mechanism, which evolved long before we had all the plenty of the modern world. And I'm sorry, like, and it may sound harsh, it may sound negative. I don't mean it that way at all. I'm really trying to be encouraged. Understand her. She is wired for her own survival. Trust her. Model the behavior that you want. Let her get there. You know, you speak to kids often in a language that's a little bit too advanced for them, knowing that they'll get there. If you want her to share, don't force her to share. Don't grab her toys. Don't use your size and force. Don't give her timeouts. You know how you get her to share? You share. You share. She'll figure it out. You share. And if having other kids over at a time when she's not ready to share, and you should respect her desire to not share because it is a survival mechanism. If your ancestors and my ancestors hadn't had that hoard stuff at three, we wouldn't be here. We would have just freaking died. So she's too young to share. That's fine. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So don't put her in situations like that. I mean, if the neighborhood friend is over, maybe there's a game you can play where you all roll balls to each other. Maybe there's something like hide and go seek or tag or something like that, which isn't a sharing game. Maybe there's things that you can do. But, you know, kids, they hang on to stuff like that. I mean, I remember being that age. I remember being 11 months old. But I remember what it was like before I could even walk. I remember being that age. Somebody gave me a Winnie the Pooh book when I was three, and I just put my X on it and tried to write my name, and it was mine, and I wouldn't lend it to any. Of course not. That's how we survive. You're asking her to go against her basic survival instincts, and you're forcing her to do that. Of course she's going to have a tantrum because you're saying to her, hey, do stuff that might get you killed. Do stuff that might have you starve to death. Or it's not even just starving to death. If you've got a three-year-old and they're handing out their food, you know what they have less of? They have less fuel for their immune system at a time when the bugs were everywhere, the germs were everywhere, the viruses were everywhere. So maybe she's given away 300 calories or 200 calories or 100 calories, and maybe that 3 or 2 or 100 calories is the difference between life and death for her because she needs fuel for her immune system. Take it off the table. Take force off the table with your children. I'm sorry. Just take it off the table. You tell me, where else is force on the table? Right? If your wife is eating something and she doesn't want to share it with you, do you just wrestle it out of her hand? Elbow her? Wrestle it out? Give me that to me. You don't do that. You know, I mean, if your boss isn't giving you a raise, do you just wrestle his wallet away from him and take the money? I'm sorry, this is incomprehensible to me. You take force off the table. it's, you know, this is literally like, well, who's going to build the roads? You'll find a way. If you take force off the table, you find a way to solve these problems. Like, if we take the government out of the social equation, we'll find a way to solve these problems, and that solution will be much better. You have this option called, well, I'll just force her. I'll just wrench open her hands, take her toy away from her, and say, we need to share. Which, again, her neurophysical system experiences that as a death threat. Of course she's going to have a tantrum, wouldn't you? If you were driving in a car and somebody was weaving in and out of traffic, barely in control of the car, and you thought you were about to die, wouldn't you have a fucking tantrum? I know I would. I knew a guy in business who was like that once. Never got into the car with him ever again. Steph, how do you find the motivation to write a long novel? I've been daydreaming about writing novels for like a decade now, but the sheer time it takes to get to the end of it feels so daunting that it demotivates me. It's like a crazy long marathon, and I'm avoiding it because it feels like walking through a desert, even though I really, really want to do it. So you want me to solve a central life issue of yours for $4? All right. All right. So, if you want to write a novel, you'll never be able to do it. If you feel like you have to, like it's like breathing, then you've got a chance. So you don't write for the end of the novel. You write for the process of writing. Do you enjoy the process of writing? I don't do these shows so I can get to the end and turn off the damn camera. I do these shows for the enjoyment, value, and richness that I get and hopefully provide over the course of our time together. I don't have a motivation to write a long novel. I enjoy the process of writing. You know, life's a journey, not a destination. You get all of that, right? If you don't enjoy the process of writing, then don't write. I mean, like, I don't really understand that. It's like saying, well, how do I win a marathon when I really, really hate running? It's like, well, you can't. Because you hate running. Now, if you like running, then I guess you can run longer and longer and run a marathon. But if you don't enjoy the process of writing, you might have a vanity thing, like I just want to write a novel. I want to have said that I wrote a novel. I want to hand out that I wrote a novel. I want to have a stack of paper on my desk. I want to say I wrote this novel. It could be a vanity thing, in which case you won't do it. You won't do it. Because deep down you get that it's not an honorable reason to write a book. Like, why did I write my last novel? To prepare my audience, to prepare my audience for what's coming. And to teach them to learn to love women. Look, I'm aware that there's a lot of suspicion or skepticism towards the female in some aspects of alternative communities. And I don't think it's huge in this community, but it's definitely there. So a lot of what I do, based upon sort of the questions, is to remind people to, you know, don't just blame women for their biology or their evolution, or like, women are as men chose them to be. Oh, women have hypergamy. It's like, well, yeah, but men are as women chose them to be, and to a slightly lesser degree, but still important, women are as men chose them to be. If men really, really wanted women to have the same upper body strength and wouldn't mate with women who didn't, or more upper body strength, then women wouldn't have 40% less upper body strength than men. If men didn't like boobs, women wouldn't have boobs, right? Like most mammals don't, right? So I really enjoyed the process of writing. I love meeting the characters. I love playing around with the scenes and scenarios. I love all of that stuff. I love getting to know the people. I love the scintillating language that comes burrowing up like Scud missiles out of the unguessed recesses of my brain. I love the fact that the lizard layer of my consciousness can carve scintillating syllables from the syntax of sophistry, to get a little alliterative. So I love the process. I love the process of writing. I'm disappointed when it ends, and I'm looking forward to writing another one. If you like the process of writing, it's not a long novel. I don't sit there with my, I've been married to my wife over 20 years now. I don't sit there and say, man, this is a long marriage. I enjoy every day. I mean, for the most part, right? I mean, and if there's a day I don't enjoy, it's almost never because of her. I can't even remember the last day that I didn't enjoy because of my wife, years and years and years ago. And probably just one day at a time. So is it for your vanity? Or is it for the good of something? Is it for your vanity or is it for the good of something? If it's for your vanity, you just want to write a book, you want to say that you've written a book, you want to finish a book, you want other people to read it and say how great you are, you'll never do it. You won't do it. Is there some good you can do in the world? Maybe it makes, and maybe it's just personal, maybe it just makes you a better person. But is there some good that you can do in the world? Will it help people? I know that my novel, The Future, which I wrote a year and a half ago, I mean, people have given me great praise for that. Because it gives a compelling vision of the world that we're all sacrificing various things to try to achieve. Right? A world of peaceful parenting, a stateless society, a society of ostracism for immorality, a society where my brother and I would have been saved from my mother rather than abandoned to the deep well of her madness. It's a healing process for myself. I think it's inspiring and healing for other people. I think for the present, my novel, The Present, it's about understanding that women have been driven insane by the unearned. We almost none of us have the capacity to resist the unearned any more than we wouldn't cash in a winning lottery ticket, you know, with dreams of all the good we would do with the money. And to blame women for the system, to get mad at individuals for the effects of a system is like calling workers under communism lazy because they just seem unmotivated. Right? The system has given them all the perverse incentives, and there are very, very few among us, very few among us, who can survive inverse incentives. Right? I happen to value sometimes inverse incentives a little bit too much. So for me, you know, you get flack when you're over the target. I'm drawn towards what is considered unspeakable, because what is considered unspeakable is generally what heals society. So I'm drawn towards the unspeakable because that's, you know, if society is getting worse and worse and worse, everything that people aren't talk about, won't talk about, is potentially the cure, right? Very few people do anything other in this life than respond to incentives. It's a foundational process of economics. There are very few of us who are willing to sacrifice for abstract standards. Most people just respond to incentives, right? Why did conservatives take the COVID vaccine much less than liberals? Because liberals tend to be in poorer health. They tend to have worse immune systems. They tend to be more sickly and more ill. I mean, physical attractiveness is a sign of a very robust and strong immune system. And so if you've been less sickly over the course of your life, less ill, less under the weather, less tired, less whatever, right, then you're just not as afraid of a virus. It's one of the many reasons, but that would be one of them, right? Why are you doing what you're doing? Is it because you want to do some good in the world? That's your motivation. Is it because you want to bring, maybe it's a comic novel, maybe you want people to laugh, maybe it's a novel of moral instruction, you want people to be better, maybe it's a warning novel, you want people to be prepared. So it's not about, like, this last novel wasn't just, oh, I want to show people I'm good with dialogue, right? I mean, I think I'm good with dialogue. Like, I'm good creating vivid, memorable characters. But what do I want people to get out of it? I want them to be prepared for shortages as well. That's not a bad thing to do with a book, is it? Get people to get some food in the basement, some preparation for what is almost certainly coming. So then I say, okay, well, gosh, you know, I just don't feel like writing today. And there were times like that. It's very rare, but there were times like that. Okay, then I wouldn't. But I wouldn't just abandon the whole book, because it's like, well, no, because if I can get, you know, I don't know, 100,000 people to be more prepared for shortages, then their children get fed, they get fed, they have a way of weathering the storm. And even if the worst case scenario is just that food gets crazy expensive, so people spend $1,000 to save $10,000 in grocery bills, great. If you're wrong about prepping, you just eat your mistakes and you save a huge amount of money. Because look at your language here. And you know this is worth more than $4, right? You can tip me more if you want, right? I've been daydreaming about novels. It demoralizes me. I'm avoiding it. Walking through a desert, I really want to do it. I. And again, I say this with great affection. Of course, you have to benefit from it. I'm not saying don't benefit from it, but it's all about you. The novel should be about doing something positive in the world. Right? Do you think society embracing UPB would unleash an age of unprecedented intellectual growth and prosperity? Yeah, of course. All right. I love the passion you speak with when the topic of parenting and raising children is reared. Always appreciate it. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Greetings all. Better late than never. Steph has been crushing it lately. Yes, I really felt that after crushing my reputation, I should also continue to crush philosophy. They eventually learn to share, the kid stuff, when they want something owned by another kid and they negotiate. Yeah, I think that's true. Just throwing this out there. Thank you for the stream. No coins right now, but we'll tip. Very thankful for these philosophy streams you do. They're always great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I like the coins thing, but like on locals, but man, I'm telling you, I get like 2/3. No, less. I get about 70% of what you tip. It's not great as far as that goes. So if you can go to freedomain.com/donate and support me that way, that's a little better. All right. Sorry, I'm just getting caught up here. And then we will. My daughter has arranged a game that she wants me to play, so I'll have to go off a bit, go off soon. All right. The parenting stuff is greatly helpful. Thank you. Can't wait for the parenting book. You sharing shows. There's enough to go around. you sharing shows. There's enough to go around. I got it. Lead by example and show the path without force. Great advice. Absolutely. You know, like my daughter went through a shy phase, and so did I when I was a kid. And so how did she get over her shy phase? She just saw me chatting with people and enjoying my conversations with people. Everywhere I go, I love to chat with people. I really, really do. I had one of these annoying mornings, you know, like, you know, being over 50, and I just recommend this as a whole. It's not medical advice. It's just my particular personal preference. Get your blood work done. It's my particular personal preference. Not medical advice. I'm not a doctor. Just, you know, get your work done. Blood work done. So I went to get my blood work done this morning. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh. Why does everything seem to take forever? I spent half a day trying to get my blood work done. I had a requisition. So you go there, and they're delayed, even though it's the morning. And then this woman tried to get into one vein. And you can see this. Look at this. It's not a vein. This is a mountain range. This is not like, she's not burrowing into Mama Boo Boo or something like that. She doesn't need a Black and Decker drill or a cherry bomb. It's like, I got veins right at the surface there, like right there. And I always get complimented on my veins. Back when I can't give blood because of the lymphoma, but I used to give blood all the time. And I was like, oh, your veins are so great, so easy, right? And this woman, couldn't get the veins. She went in there, she's like, oh, I missed for the first time ever. And then she kind of freaked out. And then she went to go get someone else. I went to a different room. And anyway, so I was, and I knew that they felt a little bad about it. And I get, you know, it just things kind of slow and just everything seems to take forever these days. But I was chatting to the woman who finally was good at getting my blood. And I was like, hey, when you're taking blood for kids, do you ever like just pop in vampire teeth and turn the lights down and say, I hear you've been bad. Wah, wah, wah. Anyway, I just wanted to remind myself, I probably shouldn't make people laugh when they're sliding steel into me. It's probably not the wisest idea to make her laugh when she was javelining me in order for to get the blood red soup of my health. So yeah, just model. You know, I wanted my daughter to be more social, so I'm just more social. Just out there chatting with people and all that. So. I find as a person with ADHD that what is most stimulating is not either always what I enjoy or what's important. Uh-huh. I enjoyed your videos on your editing process for the present. Yeah, they were good. Right. Being sick with the flu is not a day you enjoy. But that is no one's fault. I really rarely get sick. I really get sick. It's kind of an annoying thing to say because some of it's luck. But when I got COVID, I think there was like one afternoon I just passed out. I don't mind it. Many years ago, I got food poisoning. Oh, no, not even that long ago. I think last year I got food poisoning. And I basically didn't eat anything for like 5 days or something like that. And I was just like low energy. But I don't know, throwing an audiobook and spending the day half passed out is fine. Somebody says, I finished The Future yesterday, my novel. It was amazing, Steph. Thank you. I appreciate that. On chapter 9 of The Present. Very good stuff, sir. Thank you. The parent says, understood. Thank you, Steph. I always felt kind of uneasy about the sharing thing, but I did not want to come off aloof to other moms. But I will back off making my daughter do things she's uncomfortable with doing. Yes, see, here's the thing, too. When you're around moms, the moms are all about sharing, right? Gotta share. Moms and socialism go hand in fist, right? So, yeah, but you want to liberate the other parents, too, because half the time you're parenting other parents as well just by being liberal with your child, right? So if your kid is not sharing, just say, oh, yeah, no, she's too young to share, right? I mean, she'll get to sharing when she's older, right? So for the last 3 years, I had one day of being very sick. Nasty cold once every 5 years is not terrible. Yeah, I think I get a cold every 2 to 3 years. It's usually not that bad. Super stream. Thank you very much. All right. Any last tips before we close off for the night? Of course, prepping in an apartment / dense urban housing does not work. Gardens will be raided. Heck, 50 years ago, Dad told me tales of rhubarb being stolen from the garden. I'm sorry, are you still in a city? What? Well, I'm not sure I can do much about that. Other than the usual recommendation, which everyone knows. Any thoughts on Lauren Southern? Oh, I don't know. Do you guys care? Do you care? Too poor to leave. You know it's way cheaper in the country, right? Do you care? You care, I guess. Everyone but one. Have you read her post on Twitter? Did you read her post on Twitter? I haven't watched her video, but I did read her post on Twitter. She divorced 2 years ago, yeah. And it, from what she said, I'm not telling anything that's not public knowledge. So, yes, she got married to a guy she referred to as a Fed, and they had marital issues, and her activism limited his career in security service, intelligence service, or whatever he was doing. And she says that he had a problem with her having ADHD, which is the first time I've ever heard of her having ADHD. And he left the family. I don't think she didn't even get child support or alimony. And it's just, and she ended up in a trailer park, I think. And it was just a really, really tragic and awful mess. And I think people were some people in the manosphere, I think, were annoyed at her for continuing to wear a wedding ring long after she got divorced. And you know, it's a very, very sad situation and very, very tragic all around. So, I don't have anything in particular to add other than, you know, it's a really tragic situation. And, you know, we have a boy growing up without a father and, that's, parents splitting up young, dad gone, you know, that's, I know a little bit about that. Of course, I'm not in a million years putting Lauren Southern anywhere close to my mom, but it's a very, very tragic situation. So sad. She touched on all these points in the video, including why she wore the ring. Yeah, I think in the post she talked about being in denial. Yeah, she's in a really tough situation. I mean, for me, my reputation blew up in my 50s, and that's a whole lot different than stuff happening in your 20s. So. Let's see here. Some Manosphere guy attacked Lauren Chen, who's happily married with a baby. Some men have nothing better to do but clout chase. You know, it's... do you still think a man should marry a woman who doesn't outdo him money-wise, career-wise? What the hell are you talking about? Do you still think a man should marry a woman who doesn't outdo him money-wise or career-wise? I can't... I have no recollection of saying anything like that. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to understand this. Do you still think a man should marry a woman who doesn't outdo him money-wise or career-wise? I don't know what that means, and do you still think? I don't know what argument I've ever made regarding that, so I don't know how to... I do not know how to answer this, my friend. Men do not care about it. Never said not to do it. What makes some women tomboys, and is it a red flag? Well, because, you know, like, I grew up with these two opposing poles of femininity, right? So I had my mom, who was, like, really kind of hysterical, Blanche Dubois kind of wild, neurotic femininity. And I had my aunts, who were, like, solid, sensible Christian women. They worked on farms. They raised children. They were community organizers. They did great things with charity. They just were solid, sensible women. So, you know, they're both women. Both women, right? And try not to put femininity into some, like, some femininity is being able to wrestle a pig and put up a barn. And some femininity is being, you know, 18 pounds dripping wet and having a tiny poodle stick out of your Hermes bag or something, right? Like, there's a lot of wide spectrums when it gets to femininity. There's nothing wrong with tomboys, and there's nothing wrong with boys who are, you know, maybe a little bit less on the masculine side. I mean, it's all just a big spectrum, so... I don't think it's a red flag. In fact, I think that a girl who's a tomboy is probably a green flag as far as all of that. So. A live stream from the other day. Lawyer has no time for family. Unwise to expect otherwise, but if you're okay with it, your choice to make. My older sister is a tomboy, happily married for 7 years with two children. Yeah. I've known a lot of tomboys over the course of my life, and they grew up. I've not known a single tomboy who didn't grow up to be a great woman. Honestly, not known a single tomboy who didn't grow up to be a great woman, because they're more independent. They think for themselves. They don't go for cliches. They're not NPCs. They're not programmed. They're not predictable. They are just themselves. So I think that tomboys are fine, and to me, that's a real. You know, I remember when I met my wife, we did really action stuff. Like, I'm an action guy. You know, we went ATVing through swamps. We did dirt biking up and down these wooden slats in the woods. Just really just great stuff. And she's really, I called her action wife. She's like action wife, not very posable, but very action oriented. And she's, you know, very feminine and great. And it's, I don't like this frou-frou, skinny, benini, you know, hysterical, neurotic. You know, that's not my style of femininity at all. I grew up with that, but I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. Yeah. I'm wondering if that question was, do you still think a man should not marry a woman who doesn't outdo him money-wise? Should marry a woman who doesn't? Yeah. Do you still think a man should marry a woman who doesn't outdo him money-wise, career-wise? The primary standard for marriage is virtue. The primary standard for marriage is virtue. Somebody says, I recall either a call-in or a question on a live stream. He was looking to marry a woman who was a high-powered exec or something grand, and he was more blue-collar. You said it would be a problem. Yeah, for sure. Of course it will. Of course it will. So she's used to a certain style. She's used to a certain life. And women want to marry up. It's basic hypergamy. Women want to marry up. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have no issues with it. And of course, there are exceptions, blah, blah, blah. Don't give me the base level IQ test of thinking of an exception for every rule. I'm not talking to anyone in particular, just for people listening to this. But she's going to have a tough time if he is perceived to be by her, and maybe even objectively, if he's in a lower economic class, if he's a lower educational class, You know, if she's going to go to some highfalutin gala or ball or hotel opening or premiere of some sophisticated play, and he's Joe Plummer coming along, she's just going to feel rough, man. It's going to be rough for her. The other way is not so bad. Plus, of course, if she's, let's say he's making $80,000 a year and she's making $200,000 a year, well, if they want to have kids, she's got to stay home and have the kids. And it's ideal if she breastfeeds the kids and hope that they would homeschool and so on. So she's giving up, you know, more than twice his income to stay home. That's tough, man. Women who make a lot of money are looking for guys who make even more money. But the guys who make even more money want a more feminine woman who's going to stay home with their children. Because what's the point of all this money if you don't use it to transfer your values to the next generation? What's the point of all that money? Oh, man. I got a really fast tablet that's buried with me. What's the point? Why would a man want to go out and make all this money? Go make $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. What's the point of all of that? It's to pay someone to bring your values to life in your children, in the next generation. That's what men work for. We work to transfer values to the next generation. Why? Because that's called civilization. That's why writing was invented. That's why libraries were invented. That's why songs were invented, so we could record our feats and pass them down. Men gather resources to transfer their values to the next generation. And if a woman's like, well, I have resources and I want to work, it's like, okay, so you want me to take my children, have them raised by strangers with God knows what values, why on earth would I be working? What am I working for? To pay someone from Guatemala to raise my children as if they're in a Guatemalan village as opposed to where I grew up? God. Why do you make money? To make your values immortal. You understand? Why do you make money? To make your values immortal. Making reason and virtue immortal is the entire alchemy of life in a nutshell. To anybody with half a brain and more than 3 moral neurons kicking around in their noggin. To make truth, reason, and virtue immortal, to make it eternal, to universalize it across the span of time, is the entire purpose of thought and reason and work. You follow? Come on. You know how much I burned to the ground in the pursuit of reason, truth, and virtue? Do you know how much fame and money and travel and acceptance I burned to the ground in the pursuit of virtue? One day, I will tell that tale. And your jaw will hit the floor. Your jaw will hit the floor. And that's good. It's like me saying, you know, I could have written 10 more books if I hadn't been a father. Costs a lot of time and money to raise a kid, especially when you homeschool. It's a sacrifice. No, it's not. You see, if I had hung on to the money, if I had wanted the money, I'd be buried with a bunch of numbers and forgotten in a decade. No, thank you. No, thank you. You know, there's a scene in my novel, The Future, when there's a kid in a train and things just flash by. It just flashed by. He flashes by a train station. There's a little kid in a pool of light waiting. What's he waiting for? The train doesn't even stop. Flashes by. The pagans, the blue-haired, blue-bodied pagans in England when the Romans came and the Christian missionaries came. You know what they said? They said, you know, we think of life like we've got this little hut and there's a window on both sides and a bird flies in one end and out the other. We don't think about where the bird came from. We don't think about where the bird goes. It's gone, gone, gone. Come and gone. Now, we think about where the bird comes from, and in particular, we think about where the bird is going, because we have something after life to think about and look at. Psh. Do you want to be just like a bird that flies through a house and is forgotten? Or do you want to be like something carved in the heavens, like a constellation with a giant fucking story behind it that everyone can see forever? Now, most people can't be immortal artists, sculptors, musicians, philosophers, but we can all partake of eternity by birthing life and teaching life. The value in the human is the values, not the breath. It is the ideals, not the cells. It is the fragments of eternity we can massage into being through the sacrifice of that which is passing. All currencies pass, but you can spend your money to grab a slice of eternity and hang like a constellation in the night sky of mankind's imagination from here to for fucking ever. Forever. It's a pretty good deal. Yeah, I spent some money as a parent. Yeah, burned my reputation. I don't do the calculations of how much I've given up, because I haven't given up anything. What did I give up? Oh, I gave up the opportunity to be well paid for lying my fucking ass off. Sorry, I remember the devil's story from when I was a child. Not a good deal. Does not work out in the long run. Not even that much in the short run. What did I sacrifice? Oh, the chance to misrepresent. The chance to ignore essential issues. Ooh, what a great job that would have been. See, the problem is, once you know the truth, if you're forced to lie, it feels so humiliating, which is why so many people avoid the truth, so they never understand how much they're forced to lie and bow down and scrape before the powers that be. No, thank you very much. I know a guy who's totally blue-collar and is married to a physician. They were together since they were teenagers, though. They have 3 or 4 kids, I believe. Relationship is good. Very different scenario than marrying into that situation, in my opinion. Understand what Steph means. Steph burned a couple of million in pursuit of virtue. I refuse to do those calculations. Because that's to say that there's a cost. Yes, Steph, you're a champion of this. You could have taken the dollars, said what the powers wanted you to say, but said, go pound sand. Don't think I could have done that. I have immense respect for you for that reason. You also made a similar point about refusing inheritance dollars because that might compromise your virtue. Amazing. Yeah, my father, I was offered money from my father's inheritance. I said, no. We'll donate on the main side in the future. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Most people would say they hope to leave the world in a better place than they left it. We then, I think most people like to think they try to live according to that principle. Well, maybe. As a Christian, I look to the saints for this. They made virtue immortal by choosing death and torture over being forced to lie and renounce God. Yeah. Well, I don't have the afterlife as the consolation prize, so I won't say it's tougher, but it's a little tougher in some ways. Obviously, death and torture is a lot tougher than a smaller audience. Oh, God, that's death and torture to my vanity. But the immortality will live in the minds of others, not in my soul in the afterlife for me. Steph could have sold to the Chinese like Rogan. Now nobody listens to his show. Yeah, Joe Rogan ever taken on child abuse? I don't think so. I hope to get to hear your story about everything you gave up. Must be wild. You have no idea. You have no idea how wild that story is. It's mad. Absolutely mad. Absolutely mad. When do you think you will tell the story? Oh, I don't know. I don't know when it feels right, but my instincts tell me to. Somewhere there's an alternate universe with a staff that sold out and took the money. He has a pencil mustache, wears a top hat, and cackles frequently. Maybe, maybe. All right, any last tips? Any last consolation prizes for the mere pursuit of immortal virtue as opposed to the transitory fame and self-contempt of seeking power in the here and now? I just love the way these things come tripping off my tongue. Isn't it wild? It's almost like speaking in tongues. Hopefully not forked tongue. If you're listening to this later, freedomain.com/donate. Any chance to add Stefan Molyneux to the History of Philosophy series? I think that's a great idea. I will absolutely do that. Oh, hit me with a why. I have a fragment of an autobiography that I started about my very early life. Hit me with a why if that might be interesting to you. All right. Okay. All right. I appreciate that. I might put that out to donors. But I did start it, and then I thought I'm kind of dragging other people into it who don't have any particular responsibility for my notoriety. So, okay. Well, I appreciate that. All right. It looks like we're done with donations. So I really do appreciate everyone's time tonight. Always a great and deep pleasure to have these conversations with you. I am enormously honored that you guys keep this going. It was fairly exciting for a while there. It's been exciting at various points over the course of the show, but the fact that we have bounced into this corner of radiating honesty is a really wonderful thing, and I just am enormously grateful, and I hope that I do you guys proud every time I open my mouth, or at least every other time I open my mouth. And I really, really appreciate that. Can we share steam, Free Domain? I don't know. You got a sauna? And you'll find out if I'm wearing pants. Actually, everybody knows. Oh, can you share the stream? Yeah, go for it. Share. You can totally share the stream. I would appreciate that. All right. Mwah. Lots of love, my brothers and sisters. freedomain.com/donate. If you would like to help out and you're listening to this later, I would really, really appreciate it. And hopefully this weekend we'll start rolling out the AI so that you can ask questions, and I can just retire to picking my nose with a boat oar. All right. Thanks, everyone. Lots of love. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.